there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. We're in the studio with Lisa Arnone and Jonna Valerio today. And it's a very interesting combination of people. We're in on the fifth of our classes, where we are teaching as we would teach psychologists. And the response we have gotten from you has been really good. So I'm going to continue with this. We're here today. We're not here next. Okay. So tomorrow, today, so let's see what we're going to talk about today. We're talking about if you're a therapist, and I'm here with Lisa, who is an associate of mine, who is also supervised by me, and she's trying to learn some of the tricks that I've known over the years. And I'm with Jonna Valerio, who's known me for many, many years, who's in social work school and been studying this as well. So the question becomes, what do we teach to the therapists who are the ones who are going to try to help you get through things? And one of the big items that we have to determine is how to discern between what is normal and what is not so normal. What should be attended to, what shouldn't be attended to? Very, very difficult to determine. Because we have a thing called differential diagnosis, which helps us put into categories different things that people do. And we have you covered no matter where you are. We could either be schizophrenic, manic depressive. We could have you as a borderline personality, personality disorders. We could get you no matter which way you're coming from with some kind of diagnostic term. There is no diagnostic term for normal in the DSM. So you would imagine there would be a category that says no normal. So we have to figure out what normal is, and why is this important? Let's say that you're just starting to hire somebody for a job, and you're looking to get employees, as I've done many times. Wouldn't it be nice to figure out, hey, is this person okay, or are they a little unbalanced? Are they a little imbalanced, and is that going to come back and bite me sometime in the future? Am I going to have trouble with this person? Wouldn't that be good to be able to determine that in advance? What if you went on a date? You met somebody you were going out with for the first time. Wouldn't it be good to figure out, is this person okay or not okay? Well, of course it would, and you have your own way of determining that. You have your own way of seeing it. Many people know things like, oh, you know, he's 42 years old. He doesn't have a job, but he still lives with his mother. Maybe there's a problem there. Maybe. So, you know, there are things that we use. I remember one man. I remember a woman who I was talking to. She was going to kind of help out with some of my work, my research. And when I spoke to somebody about her and I said, hey, you worked with her for a while. How is she? And he used a magical Italian word. He said, pots. Pots, which means she's crazy. And how did he determine that? He determined that because she used to wear roller skates. And she would furiously race up and down hallways in roller skates whenever she got a chance. Other than that, she was fine. And he said there's something crazy about it. Now, I'm not trying to determine what's crazy and what's not. Because one of the things that I teach my students is that I am crazy, and so are they. So what is crazy? Is crazy a judgmental word? No. Crazy just means that I am not in my right mind. I have been working my whole life to get in my right mind, and I'm almost there. And if I'm lucky, I'll get there before I die. But it's a constant evolution. But there are people who are better off than I was, who are in their right mind right from the beginning. they were okay. How do we determine all this? And this is what I'm going to ask Lisa and you, Johnny, to help me with because of the way you've seen it. So it's very hard to determine. So now, as a therapist, when a person comes to see you, we always have to figure two things. What are your needs as a therapist, right? Now, as a therapist, every therapist I know who's beginning needs to have the client like them, have the client come back, and have the client keep paying, right? That's a therapist's needs. That's number one need. Lisa.
Right, so the therapist's needs are important, but the therapist is also supposed to be able to put those needs aside after they acknowledge that they have them to themselves, not to the therapist, not to the patient, of course.
And not to their supervisor either. Everybody wants to look like, except if it's me, but everybody wants to look like they're saintly and they're wonderful and they just want to give and so on and so forth. But therapists have needs. I mean, if the therapist doesn't feel good at home, if his wife is not treating him right, he needs to be appreciated by his patients. Or she. If you're not getting it at home, you hope to get it in there. Now, I know this sounds crazy, right? Don't all of you wish you said, oh, my God, that's terrible. And some of you therapists who are listening would say, oh, no, I never take that home. No, you do take it. You take it to your practice. So one of the things we want to determine is what the therapist needs is first. That's first. And then we'll go on to the clients and how the clients look and how you can determine whether or not they are, quote, normal, abnormal. One of the things that Einstein said, I like what Einstein said. He said, of all people, Einstein to say this, which was a surprise. He said, neurosis is people doing the same thing over and over again, hoping to get a different end result. If you're repeating the same pattern over and over again, you're doing the same thing and you keep hoping it's going to get better. You think this time it's going to be different. He said, that's classic neurosis. He said, that's classic neurosis, but he said, that's a sign that something is wrong. Another man I knew who was a psychiatrist said the difference in people is some people see there's mice and elephants. And he talked about mice and elephants. And he said either a problem is a mouse or it's an elephant. He said, and when you see a mouse and you treat it like an elephant, he said, then that means you need help. And some people see elephants, big problems, but they ignore them and they treat them like mice. He said, and that's another problem. Which brings us to the hyper-hypo theory of how you could determine normalcy or abnormalcy, which we're going to go into in a minute. Carl Menninger, one of the most brilliant men, theorists in psychology, said, when they asked him what does he want of his patients, he said this. He said, we want him to see that as a result of being a human being who came into contact a long time ago with other human beings who were not perfect, and as a result of misunderstanding certain things and being misunderstood by certain people, he experienced pain and fright. So I'm going to repeat that part first. We want him to see, like, this is what do you want of your patient, right? Your patient comes to see you. What do you want? We want him to see that as a result of being a human being a long time ago who came into contact with other human beings who were not perfect like your parents, and as a result of misunderstanding certain things and being misunderstood by certain people, for example, believing that you are at fault for your mother's misery, you know, being that it is your fault and that's a misunderstanding, or feeling that there is something wrong with you or broken with you, that as a result of this misunderstanding, he experienced pain and fright from which he tried to protect himself by devices which he still continues to use, like rationalization, like going numb, like going sleepy, like running around, like drug addiction, like whatever you could do to get away from the pain, and that you used it back then as a kid, and you still continue to use. And Menninger goes on to say, not from present necessity, but from a kind of habit. We want him to see that he persists in the same unprofitable formula of adaption. What a wonderful phrase that is. That, with, in other words, he's saying we continue to do the wrong things because it's as if we're still children. We want him to see that he expects the wrong things from the right people and the right things from the wrong people. A good example of that would be falling in love with somebody who is incapable of loving you back. You have the right thing with the wrong person. And then, or if you meet somebody who would be a good partner, you expect the wrong thing from them. You want them to support you or just give you sex or something like that. Expecting the wrong thing from the right people. And finally, said Menninger, we want him to see that he does not want to see it. That he wants to get well in a way, but is afraid to. That he wants to change, but he fights against it. This is Carl Menninger. We will post this on our website, The Positive Mind, a quote by Carl Menninger. With your help, Lisa, send it over to Tom, and Tom will put it up on the website, okay? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Jana, you're in social work school.
Right.
They're teaching you differential diagnosis, right? You're taking courses on it?
Just started it, yeah.
And what do the teachers tell you? I mean, what do they say? How do you help people? I like the system they use. What do? They give you a...
Well, what they do is, like, sometimes they'll give us a case, you know, like a person who has... And oftentimes it's someone that they've seen in their own practice. And they'll say, okay, this is this person's story. And break it down and what is their diagnosis. And we try to do that in groups. We break it down. Right now, we're learning about schizophrenia. So that's really what our focus is right now, people who have that.
And what is schizophrenia?
Well, it's a thinking disorder instead of a mood, as compared to a mood disorder.
Whoa! Beautiful, right there. Thank you, Jana. So Jana says that in school they teach you there are two kinds of disorders, mood disorders and thinking disorders. So this is already teaching us something. What's the difference? What's a mood disorder is?
Depression is a mood disorder. And schizophrenia is a thinking disorder. And many, many people have it. And, you know, sometimes it comes out in men, usually in their late teens, and in women, usually in their 20s and 30s, where they have, like, a break all of a sudden.
So you think funny. And in this thinking disorder, they call it a thinking disorder, you think funny. Now, have you ever met people, my friends, who think funny? And this is the way they may think funny. They may, paranoia is easy to see. They'll say to you, I wanted to get out of the hospital, but I realized that they were waiting to get me out of the hospital so they could put somebody in my bed to take advantage of the fact that I was here. Funny thinking, right? Now we see funny thinking, and what do we say to ourselves? Do we say, oh, that's just an odd thought? Well, if it's me interviewing somebody who wants to work with me, I go, whoops, there's a little one right there. And a number of times in talking to people, I hear funny thinking. So what is funny thinking? Funny thinking is something that just seems strange that somebody thinks.
It seems like one of the things that would define it is that it's not necessarily connected to reality. It's the person has their own sense of what's going on that affects how they see things. So maybe they want the bed in the hospital, maybe they don't, but the person feels like they're being pushed out, so their perception of that is then they want my bed, so I'm going.
Well, now here's the problem with that, Lisa. Who determines what reality is? You see, right, I mean, I understand you're saying not being in reality, but then that means that I have the right to determine reality. So let's say that I'm a minister in a church, and I believe that reality is love of God, and therefore everybody who doesn't love God is not part of my reality, and therefore something's wrong with them. We have to be careful who determines what reality is.
Absolutely.
What is reality? So one of the things as a therapist, the therapist usually is a person who's supposed to know what reality is, and the next person comes in, and they don't know what reality is. I know certain things about reality. I know, for example, if somebody worries all the time, that they're broken, that a piece of their mind is bent. So we were going over a list of things that happen to people. Here they are. That could be hyper or hypo, and these would tell you whether or not the person's got a little confusion in their heads. Now, that's the beginning. Now, keep in mind, you know, they say you don't have to be crazy to go to a therapist. That's not true. You need to be crazy to go to a therapist. A little bit crazy. But I'm a little bit crazy, too. I went to a therapist when I was younger. I was confused. I couldn't tell the difference between what I grew up and the reality that I knew and the reality that I wanted to see. I wanted to challenge it in some way, and luckily, I was able to challenge it. I think, luckily, for all I know, I'm still as wacky as I ever was. I just hid it better, you know, got to hide it better. And that was from Catch 22. Catch 22, you remember Catch 22? Mm-hmm. The guy goes in and he says, "Doc, I had a dream about fish." And the doctor says, "Ah, that's a sex dream." And then he goes back the second time and he said, "Doc, I had a dream about fish." And the doctor said, "Ah, that's a sex dream." And he goes in a third time and he says, "Doc, I finally had a dream about sex." And the doctor said, "Yeah, that's a fish dream." Hyper or hypo? Hyper means too much of, and hypo means too little of, right?
Yes.
Okay. Hyper or hypo, and we're going to go over a number of things that you can see, and you can say, you know, that's a little too much of that, or that's a little too little of that. And you could use that as your own barometer to figure if a person is comfortably in their right mind or very uncomfortably in their right mind. So let's take a look at some of the things, okay? Too little or too much talking. That's simple. A person talks a lot, and they keep on talking and talking and talking and talking and talking, and you can't get a word in edgewise. What do you say? They're very talkative? In my mind, I say, oop, very anxious. Oop, can't afford to wait. Oop, can't have an empty moment. Too talkative, or they're nervous, or maybe, and then it becomes a question, is this just a phenomenon of the moment? Is this just what they're going through right now, they're so talkative? Or they like this all the time? Or they never speak, the opposite of that. They're silent. Silent could be nice, could show innocence, could show inner self-peace, right? Ooh, look what a strong silent type. But it could be the extreme of that. It could be schizoid, it could be withdrawn, it could be really gone. Hyper, hypo. Within the two, there's a range of talking that people do, that you know about. And you, my students, when you listen to somebody, they talk a little too much about something and a little too little about something. I was noticing something on the website, on the Facebook of The Positive Mind, there's somebody who talks about sandwiches all the time. Talks about what he's eating all the time. And I said, how did lunch meat become such a frequent conversation? And he's got other people who are on the website, Facebook. This is the website of The Positive Mind. But they use it as a chat room, you know? And they're going, what did you eat? Oh, you had a hot dog. What kind of hot dog? What did you put on the hot dog? And it's just back and forth and back and forth. And I look at it and I go, oof, it's a little out there. Right? What are the other things that we see in people? Go ahead, Lisa. What are some of the things that we've said? hypo or hyper.
So we were saying too much happiness or too little happiness, too much fear.
Let's take it, instead of too much, let's call it abundance of, right, or less of. You know what I mean? So it's like an extreme of or an absence of.
Okay. So an extreme of happiness or an absence of happiness.
What do you mean happiness?
Where you see someone smiling and positive.
You got to break it down.
Okay.
Too much smiling. Did you ever meet somebody who smiles all the time?
Yes.
And they smile and they smile and they smile. Too much smiling? Too little smiling. Okay. Too much talking? Too little talking. Too much sadness? Too little sadness. Too much grieving. I see people who are sad all the time about something else. Too little grieving. Too much worry. The absence of worry. Too much jubilance. This is what you were saying about happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But you know when a person's like really happy, 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 happy. That's good. That's nice. It's fun. Good to invite them to a party. But if they can't land on the ground, that's another issue. Too little happy. Too much anger. It's so easy to see. When a person goes around angry, you don't have to ask yourself, gee, I wonder what they're upset about. You have to say to yourself, that person's carrying a load. That's it. You don't. That's a problem. So you get somebody who's angry all the time. So you go on a date, right? Or you do a web date or something like that, and the person's saying, "And I resent, and I hate, and I'm a whatever reason you're staying in contact with this person." Let yourself know that you're not dealing in the range of normalcy. Too much resentment. I resent, I can't stand, even WBAI, a beautiful radio station that I love so much. If you get somebody on here who can't have a positive thing to say about anything, but all they can say is negative stuff, I'm sorry, that's not somebody who's in their right mind telling the truth and teaching us all about the truth. That's somebody who's in their wrong mind trying to get us to join in with them. Keep me positive. Too much silence. Too little silence. How about too much sleep? What about that? Too much sleep? The person sleeps too much. What are they doing? They're 14 hours a day, 15 hours a day. Something wrong. Now look, it could be physiological. It could be psychological. But it is saying there is something unusual. You can't just say he sleeps a lot. How about indulgences? Too fat, too skinny, too many drugs, too much makeup, too much shopping, too much anything. Addictions. That's a sign of somebody who's uncomfortable inside their skin. And with that, you want to try to help them. Or you want to be able to see and spot it and work with it somewhat. Too much fear. A person's frightened. Too much responsibility. Did you ever see somebody who feels responsible for everybody? They got to take care of everybody. And they have too much. And you look at them and you say, wait a minute. This is over the top. This person is responsible for everyone. That's another problem that a person would have. So this is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. Trying to tell you what we use as professionals as part of our diagnostic criteria of whether or not we're going to figure out what's crazy or not crazy, we do want to know where the person walks away from their normal edges and what it is that we can keep our eye on. And it's very difficult for you as a person who's listening to this to not just forgive the idiosyncrasies that people have. People do have idiosyncrasies. But there is a certain level of it which, when you see it, you say to yourself, oops, I don't know if I'm going to hire that person to work with me. I don't know if I'm going to trust that person with my money. I know someone the other day who was looking to join a program a rehab program and she was going to get accreditation from the head of the program was very independent, very, didn't get back to her, was supposed to respond to her, and then made excuses, the dog ate the homework, and that's the reason I didn't get there. And she, this mental health professional that I know, said, I can't work with them. If they have somebody who is not stable at their helm, I don't want to work with them. Good choice. I fully understand. Too much negativity or too little negativity. How can you have too little negativity? Because when there's an inappropriate feelings, when there are things like you can't afford to feel things, like if somebody dies, I know somebody who dealt with the loss of a child too well. There were no feelings, okay? Or little feelings. Too much isolation. Too little isolation. Too much love. Too little love. So now you hear somebody who falls in love and you say to yourself, they're in love. It's so wonderful. But very often love is a state of pathology. Very often love itself, being in love itself, is something that indicates something is wrong, really wrong. If a person comes to you and they says, of course they never go to therapy when they're in love, they go to therapy as soon as that love crashes, right? And they say, something's wrong, the love crashed, But it is the love itself that is a sign that is something wrong, because you're too invested. Love is a very nice thing, but to be overwhelmed by it, to have it take over your life, that's not such a hot sign. So who am I to sit here and judge what's right or what's wrong? The truth is, I love them all. I love you all. I am one of you myself. I feel like I am somebody who is a bent kid who is trying to unbend himself my whole life. And I keep working on it, and I keep looking at you. And if you're a bent kid and you're working at unbending yourself, I'm very happy. But if you're a bent kid who wants to drag me along on your bent road of life and you want me to collaborate with it in some way, thanks, no. You have to pay me for that one. See, then you have to come in as a professional, and you have to come in and see me as a professional, because then I could work with you and help you on that, and I could take that journey with you. But if it's going to be personal in my life, or you're going to be somebody to work with me, or somebody to be close to me, or be a friend, we can't be too crazy.
Well, we were talking earlier about how, and you're talking now about how, as a therapist, what you feel affects how you see somebody. And one of the things that I think that is important if you're a therapist is that you have to have a very broad view of what's normal, that your view has to be larger than what you came into the world with.
Very good, Lisa. Very good, yes. So you consider many other factors.
Yes, have to consider many other factors when I'm sitting with someone for the first time. And their behavior doesn't match what I would say is immediately recognizable to me as normal.
Great. And those factors would include?
So right away, I think ethnicity, because different cultures are learn to express themselves in different ways, carry themselves in different ways. Even eye contact is different in different cultures. And I think about the age of the person, where they might be in their life cycle. And so someone who's very young is going to present themselves in a different way than someone who's very old.
Yes, so there's a number of factors, and we're going to get to that as soon as we get back from our break. We have to look at some of these different factors that would affect how even we would determine it, because we have to have a broader scope, and luckily you do. We have to take a short break. When we come back, my friend, some very special music that you haven't heard before, I think. And then we will continue with our program. This is Armand DeMille. We'll be right back. Yeah.
مش جديدي عن بيت كان معاد وعن ناس ما إلها بلاد قصة عم تنتسب عن دخان ونار وعن ناس مش أحرار وعن أولاد صغار هاللي بدل ما يلعبوا عم يرموا حجار ما رح ننسى هاللي صار بس بكرة يوم جديد وهالطريق بتوصل لبعيد خلينا احنا سوا نمشي فيها بهالبلد غريب لو نادد لنجوم السماء بلك النور بيرجع عن promises we made of better times yet to arrive hope that will not fade I reach out to you I try to hang on tight something tells me we will pull through something tells me we will be alright book it up I'm a
Mira Awad, A-W-A-D, here first on The Positive Mind, from the album All My Faces, which you may or may not be able to get in America right now. It's from Israel. Mira Awad, A-W-A-D. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. We look at people and we're teaching here as we would to, as I would to a class of students, supervisees, and so on and so forth. And I'm using my two associates here to help me with this. See, if you're in school and somebody comes up to you and says, "What is hypomania?" There's a good word for you, right? And that's an abnormality of mood, but even normal euphoria and mania, characterized by optimism, pressure of speech and activity, and a decreased need for sleep. Some people have increased creativity, while others demonstrate poor judgment and irritability. So now this, in psychiatry, is called hypomania. But if you're the mother of this kid, you say, you know, she's working too hard, and she just doesn't stop, and there's something wrong. I wonder if she's on drugs, right? Because all she wants to do is sit in her studio and create. What do we as therapists see, and what do you see that's beyond the normal? So let's just go with hypomania for a moment. According to psychiatry, it's a distinct period of persistently elevated, expansive, or irritable mood lasting at least 4 days. See, if you're a shrink, you don't care about positivity for 1 day. You don't care about a little, you know, over-shopping for 1 day or 2 days. But if it goes beyond 4 days, then we goes into our little basket of, oops, this may be dangerous. And it may mean that the person's really gone off the edge. Gone off the edge means that their chemistry may have kicked in such a way that they're now going at such a high speed they can't stop. And they will either need to be spoken to, settled down, found some way to find. Maybe they need a vacation, or maybe they need medication. They need something. Now, the clinical features of mania reflect a marked elevation of mood, overactivity, and disinhibition, you know, which is like you lose your inhibitions. Now, when somebody is uninhibited, oh, how wonderful that is. It's so wonderful to see a person who's beyond their inhibition. Look, they could tear their clothes off and go dancing in the fountain. Now, if you're around a fountain, and somebody tears off their clothes and goes jumping in the fountain, you say to yourself, look how free that person feels. Well, lucky for you, you do say that because you enjoy it. I look at it and I go, oops, I think that person needs help. And I feel like Doc Martin, you know, it's like I've got to go over and see if this person's in trouble, because I think they're in trouble when they do that. It can become a disability itself. So when you see stuff that's like this, when you see stuff that's unusual, somebody's screaming, somebody's yelling, somebody's angry all the time, what does it do to you? To me, it alerts me. It's like, I don't know if any of you are familiar with the series on television called Doc Martin. He's a beautiful guy. It was on AMC, and you could get it, I think, on Netflix or Amazon. And Doc Martin was a guy who every time he would kind of look at you, he might spot something. You know, hey, you got discoloration on the left side of your nose. You know that could possibly mean. And he did it just out of curiosity because he was that kind of a doctor. Because if he saw something, he kind of attended to it in some way. Not in a hostile way, just kind of bringing you information. In my world, I see things that are disturbing, and I know people are unhappy, and I know that unhappiness itself is a form of pathology. What does that mean? There is no reason to be so unhappy all the time. I mean, if you're so unhappy all the time, it doesn't mean it's situational. Because no matter how situational it is, you can somehow still have your spirit. But when the situational, like I lost my job, I lost my wife, I lost my this, I lost my car, I lost my cat, well, maybe there's a reason you're losing all these things. You know, maybe that the real reason is not that you're depressed because you lost all these things, but you lost all these things because somehow you're out of whack. That's our job. So you see people all the time, and this is how you look at them and you approach them. But now Lisa said something very important before. She said, yes, but sometimes there's cultural factors and other factors that have to be looked at. And just before the break, you started going over them. Go over those again, Lisa.
Well, so if we're looking at culture, in some ethnic groups, when you stub your toe, you scream. And in others, when you stub your toe, you bite your lip. And so those are two very different approaches to pain, two different approaches to the world. So you have to consider where the person comes from. So to think about that, to think about, we were talking about age, someone who's very young is going to express themselves and present themselves in a way that's different than someone who's very old. And I know in the past you've talked about women after menopause, that there's a kind of shift in estrogen to testosterone, and it changes how a person talks about their life and looks at their life.
You know, men with their testosterone presence in early life, right, as opposed to their later preference.
You're going to be talking to a very different person with very different needs and a very different way of looking at the world. So all that has to come into
consideration.
Consideration, yes.
But then, of course, there's always the needs of the therapist to see it whichever way they want to see it. See, so we have the needs of the person to see whatever they need to see so that they could fulfill their empty spots. So I have an expression called finding a plus for your minus. This is what that expression means. It means when you feel that you're lacking something, you turn around and you look and you say, what would be the plus for my minus? So let's say you feel like nobody admires you. So you take a walk and you go to a playground. And there you see children, and somehow you play with the children, although nowadays they probably would stop you. And you play with the children, and the children really enjoy you, and you have a really good time. Or you go to your grandchildren. You feel like you're meaningless in your life, and you have grandchildren. You go to your grandchildren, and they just have such an appreciation of you. So you're finding a plus for your minus. You have a minus, you find a plus. Love is often finding, falling in love is finding a plus for your minus. God, I feel so terrible. I feel so terrible. Ooh, there's the love of my life. They will put the plus in my minus.
Does that work?
It works temporarily. See, and that's the trouble. That's what Carl Menninger said, you know. The trouble is it works just for the moment. And then what Einstein said is you do the same thing over and over again, and it alleviates the symptoms for the moment. But let's take a look at smoking, for example. Does smoking, if you're trying to stop smoking, and you say to yourself, I'll have just one cigarette, does that work? Yes, it works. It takes away the craving at the moment, but it also sets it up for the craving in the future. So the trouble is it doesn't work, or it works less. It works, and it takes more and more of whatever it is to get it to work. You got to become more and more blind to yourself to get it to work. And that's what kind of leads to this desperation and this frustration. Depression is such an interesting thing because, as Peter Hogan once said, this is an interesting way to look at it. He said depression is always the result of a manipulation that failed. Now, that's an interesting concept. A manipulation that failed. What he's saying, in effect, is that whoever is depressed tried to manipulate their environment, and they didn't succeed at doing it. And because they tried to manipulate and didn't succeed, that's what the depression is. Therefore, you see depression at a failed attempt of manipulation. So that's why people who fall in love and then the relationship breaks up, they get deeply depressed. The manipulation didn't work. I wasn't able to use this relationship to make myself feel better. It didn't work, so now I'm depressed. Whereas if you didn't have that love relationship, right, and you didn't try to do that, you wouldn't be depressed. So there are a lot of people who fall in love and become depressed, whereas if they didn't fall in love, they wouldn't be depressed. Interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A manipulation that failed. Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. We would want to squeeze a couple of your calls in here. I know it's fascinating stuff. I know it sounds judgmental, but I do want to say something to you about it. Lisa said, you know, Armand, so you're always making judgments. It's not judgments. It's just I've got a good smeller. If I walk into a room and something smells funny, I'll know it smells funny. If I order a piece of fish and it smells fishy, I'll say to the the guy in the restaurant, this fish smells fishy, take it back. And that means that it's been sitting out of ice for too long, and I don't really want to have it because it's gone towards iodine, and that's what I smell. Or if I walk into a room and something smells rotten, I'll say, you know, let's take out the garbage because there's something rotting in there. Or if you open the refrigerator and you smell rot, you know something's been left in there a little too long. Well, if your nose tells you something just doesn't smell right, you trust your nose. After a while, you begin saying, well, it's just not right. I don't think I'll do it. So you meet somebody, and even though they would feel like that they would be the perfect person to be with you, you don't necessarily follow through with that person because it just doesn't smell right.
Okay, ready.
Armand, what I hear you saying is that we do things to get our needs met, and sometimes what we do, sometimes our judgment is impaired because we're trying to get our needs met, we're so desperate. So are you saying that perhaps we have to have a better self-awareness, like a self-awareness and maybe something else to distract us, or if we're more self-aware, like we can interrupt something that we might regret later?
Yeah, well, good question, because number one, I think as you get older, your needs get less, number one. And number two, you don't have to do anything. You can just keep doing this and keep doing it and keep doing it until you get tired of it. But I think as you get through time, you eventually begin noticing, oh, this isn't going to work so well. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. I think what you're talking about is really interesting. It just sounds kind of ironically depressing.
I wonder why.
It's just sad. It's like I like to take the world for what it is, and if I see someone that is in a fountain, like you say, jumping in, I would rather think of them as wonderful,
yeah,
than sick. Or,
well, sick is not the right word, though. You see, I never use that word.
Yeah.
I say needy. I say, okay, this person may be in trouble, but I, like you, would rather believe that they're just splashing for fun. I would rather believe it. I'm just getting too smart in my older age. But I laugh a lot, and I have a lot of joy,
yeah,
and I have a lot of fun, and I have a lot of love in my life. So I don't miss it. But the one I used to miss, you know, like going to the disco all night and doing drugs and hanging out and, you know, with a bunch of friends until we were delirious, that one, I don't miss that anymore, but it used to be great.
Yeah.
So I know what you're saying. It does sound like it does sound like being aware is a depressing state of mind.
Yes, and the smarter you are, the more sensitive you are, the more depressing it really all is.
No, it isn't, because you see, you don't have that button to the depression place.
Okay, yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm reading a book about just like, being a child and like what it means like to nurture a child, and how children, if they're nurtured, obviously it's ridiculous, but attachment parenting, that the child will, you know, not have an addictive personality. And I find that fascinating and so simple. And if everyone just loved and nurtured their children for 2 years, 18 months, they say, you will not have an addictive personality. You will love yourself. And the chemicals in your brain are released normally, and the endorphins and the dopamine, and I mean, it's just fascinating, and it's and also again depressing that the world continues to put their children in institutions, and you know, we don't get to hold and cuddle our babies. It's just sad.
Sure we do.
Sure we do.
Sure we do. Do you hold and cuddle your babies?
Well, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. So sure you do. You get all the opportunity in the world. You may not want to now. You may be so alienated from the mothering part of you that you want to slough your kid off to something else.
Yeah. And
you may not want to do it.
I mean, that's what I think our society has turned out to be in a lot of ways.
And yet, what's your first name?
Lisa.
Another Lisa. Hello there. Lisa, and in a way, you know, it may be beautiful because people have more capacity now to observe themselves and adjust themselves than I've ever seen before. There is more consciousness on the planet than I've ever seen. There are less people who are willing to pick up something and be a part of killing something. You know, so there's some piece of it is working in the long run. As painful as it is for it to get around,
yeah,
it does seem to be getting better.
Well,
you know, I mean, even when I look at I'm not going to make a statement one way or another, but when I look at the current political election coming up, and I look at it and I go, look at that. Doesn't it look familiar? You know, doesn't this look familiar? Like,
yeah,
you know, the Republicans against the Democrats and so on and so forth. And I look for the evolvement in it. I look for how has this evolved? How has this gotten better? What element of it has improved? And if you look closely, you see it. Lisa, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. You're beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
The one thing I wanted to say about, you know, looking at the whole picture and feeling like there's so many things that are hard or difficult is that if you, in the moment, are with people and you are happy and enjoying yourself, then that's part of something bigger that makes the world a better place.
So really, we have a job. That we have a job. And a job. I mean, my job. My job is to not take myself seriously. That's all our job is. I mean, it's how serious can it be out there? You know, there are things that I concern about. There are things that I pay attention to. There are people's lives that I'm working with. And, you know, I take my responsibility. I am a professional who works very hard at making people get the best they can out of life. And I take it all seriously. But I can't take myself too seriously. And as long as I am aware of that, and as long as you're aware of that, and as long as you're aware of that, Jonna, I think we are part of a contribution. We're contributing something here. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. This is number 5 in our series of classes on the air related to psychology. We will not be here this Wednesday tomorrow because it is the 4th week in this extraordinary schedule of WBAI's meant to get you to figure out when we're on the air. But if you pay attention to thepositivemind.com, you could find out. So we will not be here on Wednesday, but we will be back the following Tuesday and Wednesday. Special thanks to John Valerio, Lisa Arnone, and we'll be back to you soon, my friends.
That's the instrumental